holiness and great couples, and we're looking at the concept of holiness. We're doing that as well as looking at some examples of families. Last week we looked at Isaac and Rebekah, and this week we're going to look at Jacob and Rachel. But before we do that, in fact, if I probably had it to do over again, I would rename the series more holiness, and then looking at couples as aspects of that. But instead, we entitled it originally Great Couples, Jacob and Rachel. But I want to begin, like I did last week, by thinking a little bit about holiness to introduce this, and then we'll go to Jacob and Rachel to get some points from that. First of all, open up to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. Last week, we introduced this chart, which we'll be focusing upon as kind of a theme of our series. What type of marriage is yours? And we're thinking about the different concepts of a happy marriage versus a holy marriage. And the goal of each is the aim or the focus. In other words, what is the goal? What is the aim of your marriage? Is it to be happy? And really that drives the emphasis of and the result of it being self-centered, feelings or emotions driven, worldly standards that it's based upon, and then pleasure-oriented. But we're suggesting that in the Bible, God is wanting us to focus upon not just simply having a happy marriage, which there's nothing wrong with having a happy marriage. And as I said last week, I hope that all of our marriages are happy. And I'm not speaking negatively about happy marriages. I'm saying that should not be our goal or our chief aim. But rather, as Christians, our chief aim should be to have a holy marriage. And that's a marriage that is Christ-centered, it's obedient-driven, it is based upon God's standards, and it is, rather than pleasure-oriented, it is commitment-oriented. Now notice in your text, 1 Peter chapter 1, 13 through 19, Peter says some things that are very important about holiness. Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Since it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. Notice that Peter says that we are to be obedient children because of the grace of God, and we're not to be conformed to our former passions, but rather we are to be holy. But what is the reason for our holiness in our conduct? Because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. One of the things that I think we often go wrong is that we often teach Christianity like this. You need to not be involved in drug use or alcohol use because of all these bad effects it's going to have upon you. And God tells us that because He knows it's the best for us. We teach our teenagers, for example, you need to not be involved in premarital sexual relationships. And if you do, look at all the consequences. You can have pregnancy and STDs and emotional consequences. And we often come at it from that angle. Or we talk about a marriage. We say, you need to be the kind of husband you need to be so that you can have a great marriage and you can be happy. And if you're not that kind of husband or wife, then you're not going to have that result. And we teach it often like that. And what I want to suggest here is that all of those are true, and we need to understand, yes, God does bless us, and we often have blessings, and we avoid curses or consequences by doing what God said. John 10:10, I come that you might have life and you might have it more abundantly. But here's the thing I think we often miss out on. That should not be our primary motivation. Our primary motivation for obeying God should not be to receive a blessing or to avoid a consequence. Our primary motivation in the Old Testament, God kept telling Israel this, and in the New Testament, God keeps telling Christians this. You do what you do because of who God is. And you see, that's a different motivation. That means if I don't understand what I'm going to avoid or what I'm going to get, I still do it. That means I tell our young people, You don't be involved in premarital sexual relationships, not only because it's going to cause you all kinds of consequences, but because your God is holy, and you are to be holy. And that means that I am concerned about my relationship and my marriage, not just because I want a result of having a good marriage, but because I know that my marriage represents Christ and the church, and I'm to be holy in that relationship. And that means I want to handle my money well, not just because I want the results of having good stewardship and the blessings of making good management, but I want to handle my money well because I know that that's a reflection upon my God, and I'm to be holy as my God is holy. Jesus put it like this in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:48. Be ye perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. You see, that's a motivation that is far more powerful and is far stronger than just doing something to get results. And so Peter is saying, holiness is based chiefly upon who our God is. And we are holy, this is one of the points we made last week, we are holy because we are in a possession of God. It's because of our relationship with God. And so we are holy because of the grace that's been poured out upon us. And so we first want to be holy because of who our God is. And that's the key message throughout the book of Leviticus. That's the key message to the church, to the Israelites. And I've said this before and I want to remind you this. He could get Israel out of Egypt easily, but it took him 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel. And he was constantly working with them to try to make them the holy nation that their identity was to be. And so God is trying to work with us to get us to be the people we ought to be. Now go on down in this same text. Skip on down to verse number 18. Knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. You see, we're holy. Once again, this goes with that same theme. We are motivated for holiness, not because of just what we're going to get or what we're going to avoid, but our motivation for holiness comes from because of what Jesus did for us. You see, so if you're in a situation in your family, even, where you feel like it is a very difficult situation, or maybe you're in a situation at work where someone is mistreating you or you're being taken advantage of, and you're being challenged very much to maintain your Christian principles and to not seek revenge, not get into some kind of bad situation where you're making some very poor choices. Maybe financially you're very stressed and you're having to make some very tough choices about some ethics and things. And what this passage is saying is when we find ourselves in those situations, the call to holiness comes from the motivation that we want to be like God because God is holy and because of what Jesus did for us at the cross. That's our motivation. And sometimes, and this is so true, sometimes we cannot figure out what good's going to come from some obedient action. You think about, I keep studying Revelation for this West Kentucky Bible School. You think about what the father who was being pulled away from his family to be put in prison, take away from his family, and he's thinking, if I get put in prison for my faith in Jesus, or if I get put to death, I'm going to leave a wife and two or three small kids. And he's thinking, what should I do? Maybe I should just compromise. Maybe I should just go along with what the world says and really not make a big deal out about this confession of Jesus as the Son of God. You see, the result would be, hey, I need to take care of my wife and kids. Maybe I don't need to stand up. And what the Bible's calling us to do here, and what it's calling that man to do in the first century, is to be holy. Even if he doesn't understand all the results, be holy because God is holy. Now go to 2 Peter chapter 1. And that applies, I think, in a lot of our marriages. And it applies to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 for that unbeliever who's in a very difficult marriage. And 1 Peter chapter 3 for the woman who's in a marriage to someone who is an unbeliever. And Peter's saying, don't leave that person, but you stay faithful to them and you represent with that gentle and quiet spirit Christ to them. You see, you be holy. In 2 Peter chapter 1, 3 through 4, if you're filling out the outlines, I've probably left you behind. Let me give you some blanks to fill in.
It's about escaping from corruption
in 2 Peter chapter 1 here.
And then we'll go to Jacob and Rachel in a moment.
Verse 3, His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence. So God has given us everything we need to be holy. Verse 4, By which He has granted to us precious and very great promises that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature. We can partake in the essence of God. We can become like God. That's an amazing statement. And listen to this. Having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. I want you to think about a mother.
And this is just for sake of illustration. You think about a mother who has some young children. And
those young children, for whatever reason, she didn't have control over them, but they're being exposed. The original illustration I heard, they were being exposed to polio. But you might think about some kind of disease like AIDS or something like that. And that child has the opportunity, has the exposure, and she can't physically get to them. Or maybe she knows they're going to be out and they're going to be exposed to these things. It's just like we know our children are going to be out and they're going to be exposed to the temptations of the world. And so what she does is she begs with all her might, please do not partake, do not touch, do not involve yourself in that polio or in that blood that could expose you to AIDS, because they know, that mother knows, that it could cost that child their life. When you think about how hard a mother would beg her child not to do something that would expose them to AIDS. And that's the idea of what Peter's saying here. God is begging us, after we have escaped the corruption of the world, to not expose ourselves again to that sinful lifestyle. We've escaped it, and it will take us to hell. And He wants us to know that we have now put it away, and He wants us to walk in holiness. And so holiness is about being holy, for I am holy, and holiness is about escaping from the corruption. Now we get back to the patriarchal family. What we left off last week is that the patriarchal family of Genesis struggles, but they figure out how to be holy. And one of the things we said is that we learn from this family that you can be holy and that you can be a holy individual in the midst of a struggling family. And this evening, we're going to focus in on Jacob and Rachel. What I mean they are still holy is they're still God's people. They still escape the corruption from around them. They're constantly growing in faith and maturing in faith. They remain faithful and they look to the promises and they keep the hope. Now go back to Genesis. And I want to observe three challenges that Jacob faced and Rachel faced. There's a lot in this story. And I just want to focus in on three of them. The first one I call the identity challenge. And all these three challenges are things that in our families, our marriages, our families, and all this. A lady last week came up to me after and said, you know, this just is not about marriage. This is about any kind of relationship. You can apply it to your relationship with your daughter, your son, your parents. And that's really what this is about. It's about trying to apply holiness to every relationship we have. Not only in our families, but even past that, but especially in our families. These three challenges you're going to face in your relationships. The first one is the identity challenge. The question that Jacob struggled with throughout his life was to trick or to trust. Was he going to try to trick his way into success, or was he going to trust God and others as he journeyed through life? Now, Jacob often is going to struggle with this identity. Is he one who is just a deceiver, as his name Jacob means? One who supplants, literally, one who grabs the heel? Or is he going to be one who is, as God later changes his name to Israel, one who strives with God? One who trusts in God? Notice that this is represented by his name, as I mentioned. And I want to look
to Genesis chapter 32 to illustrate this. Now, when you think about this concept of being a deceiver, which is what he did throughout much of his life. For example, he's going to be involved with his mother, Rebekah, in deceiving his father, Isaac, and receiving the blessing from his father, Isaac. Remember, they prepare the two goats. He puts the wool on his arms. He goes in. His father asks him, "Are you my son Esau?" And he says, "Yes, I am." He even explains when there's some skepticism on Isaac's part. And he fully deceives his father. And then he has to flee from his brother when his brother is going to want to kill him. And he has to flee and he goes down to Laban, and that's when he meets Rachel and Leah. He is even going to be involved in a deceiver when it comes to Laban. And some of